The order calling matter 87468, Conrad versus Washoe County. Council, you ready to proceed? All right. You? Yes. Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I would, Your Honor. 5 minutes, if I may.
All right. Excellent.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Luke Busby, appearing for appellant Dr. Conrad, DBA. This is Reno. Dr. Conrad is a journalist committed to informing the public about critical matters of law enforcement conduct. He sought records related to two officer-involved shootings in Washoe County and evidence handling practices of Washoe County. For each request, Washoe County ignored the letter and the spirit of the NPRA in its responses. First, in each response at issue, Washoe County violated the NPRA's mandatory 5-day response requirement in NRS 239-01071 and the requirement in NRS 239-01072 that readily available records be provided as expeditiously as practicable. Instead, Washoe County issued an automatic email response to requests indicating that an initial response would be provided in 30 days without any review of whether the records are readily available. And in our view, that there was no review of the record request at all within the required 5-day time period. Now, if Washoe County is permitted to do this, to grant itself in effect a 30-day extension in violation of the statute, why not 60 days? Why not 6 months or longer? And we think that's the core issue before the court today. In our view, this isn't just a technical violation. It frustrates the NPRA's core purpose of ensuring prompt access to public records as described in the legislative findings in NRS 239-001-1. Second, when Washoe County did deny access to records, to the police shooting records, it failed to provide a citation for the basis for the claim of confidentiality until after Conrad filed his petition, instead merely claiming that an open investigation provides grounds for categorically denying a records request. And NRS 239-01071D mandates that agencies cite, quote, specific statute or other legal authority as a basis for withholding records within 5 days. And we don't think there's any dispute that Washoe County failed to meaningfully do so until after Conrad filed his petition with the district court. Now, the district court compounded these errors by accepting Washoe County's blanket claims of confidentiality based on Donray without conducting the in-camera review that both parties requested in the briefing. Instead, ruling in footnote 2 that the parties have enough information to present a full legal argument on the confidential nature of the records at issue. And we dispute this. We don't know what the records are at that time. We have no index.
But you know now what those records are. I mean, I'm puzzled by how this is not moot, especially as to the in-camera review. Could you comment on that? I don't want to derail you, Ben.
Oh, please, Your Honor. I'm glad to answer the question. We don't know whether we've received complete responsive records. We've received a heavily redacted report, and that was during the briefing before this court. That was not for the first record request, the Vallis records request. That was not something that came to light during, you know, the time period before the district court issued its order. We don't know whether or not what we've received is complete. We object to some of the redactions that were made. We don't believe the case is moot at all. We would still like the district court to be required to do an in-camera review, a particularized finding on each withheld record, and we'd like to know what records are responsive to the request. We requested the police report, but that can contain and refer to a lot of different records, such as videos, audio, things beyond, you know, just the paper that we received. And whether or not those records exist, you know, we're not clear. We think the district court erred by not requiring a Vaughn index and then proceeding with a particularized review, which we think is required under Conrad 1 in this particular circumstance, especially when the parties in the briefing indicated that that was the appropriate measure for the court to take.
There were three record requests, and people refer to them in different order, but two of the three were resolved, and the district court determined that they were moot in district court. And then in your appeal brief, they're alluded to because sort of as historical, but you don't dispute the mootness determination by the district court as to two of the three. The third one was the one that we got the filing day before yesterday on from the state saying that they'd provided the records. Do you agree that the first two are not in play in this case?
We asked the district court for a ruling that despite the production of the records after the petition was filed, that there was still a violation of the Public Records Act in the form of the delay in disclosure based on the 30-day automatic auto-generated email that we received, and that the citations were also not provided in a timely manner. We asked the district court to rule on that and to provide attorney's fees as provided under NRS 239.011, which the district court denied.
Did the district court award attorney's fees?
It did not, Your Honor. The petition was denied in a whole.
But in your appeal brief, you don't argue against mootness as to two of the three.
We dispute that records were provided for those two requests. Those are the Lopez investigation records and the evidence logs. But the issue for us really is that we were required to file the petition to obtain those records. And so we believe that relief.
Sure, I totally appreciate that. That piece of this may not be moot, but it strikes me that from a procedural standpoint, since you didn't appeal the finding of mootness as to two of the three, those two are not in play, even arguably, except as a predicate for attorney's fees, right?
Yes, Your Honor. I think fundamentally you're correct in that analysis, but we believe the issue should still be addressed by this court in the form of a reversal of the district court's findings that the 30-day response that Washoe County provided complied with the statute, number one, and number two, that Washoe County provided citations that to the record that were adequate to support the claim of non-disclosure for that record and others.
But what about the in-camera review piece as to the... It strikes me if they've all been provided, the in-camera review would be entirely beside the point.
We believe in-camera review at this point would still be appropriate for the Valles shooting records requests. That isn't part of the record because those documents came to light in February of 2024 during the course of the briefing in this case. I think before Washoe County's answering brief was filed and before our reply brief was filed, but after our opening brief was filed. Therefore, there's really... We don't think any basis in the record for the court to rule the provision, what we've been provided renders this case moot, because the record that we have shows that that's not the case. Number one, we still dispute whether we received a complete response to that request that complies with the provisions of the Public Records Act. So we're still seeking in-camera review of the Valles shooting record, John.
It's problematic for us because we can only decide live disputes. We can't just offer advisory rulings on things we think are significant. So
I certainly understand that, Your Honor, but we believe that based on the substance of the district court's ruling on those two important questions, they still apply to the Valles shooting, and that's an issue that isn't moot. It's ripe for dispute, still before the court in our view, based on the incomplete, as we see it, provision of the records during the briefing in this case, not during the proceedings before the district court. And this court has repeatedly emphasized in Haley, Gibbons, and Conrad that under the NPRA, openness is the rule and that non-disclosure is the narrow exception. In this case, without doing an in-camera review, the court ruled that a blanket non-disclosure of these documents was appropriate, and we think that's, contrary to this court's clear decisions on those issues. And any legitimate privacy or investigative concerns can be addressed through targeted redactions, not wholesale secrecy. The burden is on the government to justify non-disclosure, and they failed to meet the burden. We don't understand how the district court could reach this conclusion that that in-camera review wasn't required without having viewed the records. And I'd like to preserve the remainder of my time if the court doesn't have any further questions for rebuttal, if I may.
Ms. Liddell, am I saying that correctly?
Yes, you are.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Lindsay Liddell, Deputy District Attorney on behalf of Washoe County, and I'm here to argue in support of the district court's decision to deny the petition for writ of mandamus in this case. The NPRA does not override the Sixth Amendment and due process constitutional rights of a criminal defendant. What Conrad seeks in this case is the ability to access and publish information and records concerning an ongoing criminal proceeding before the defendant has been convicted, and without the defendant even having notice or an opportunity to be heard in the civil public records case. This case really demonstrates the tension between the public's statutory right to records under the NPRA and the need to protect the integrity of the criminal justice system, particularly those constitutional rights. Washoe County lawfully withheld records in this case, including records regarding an officer-involved shooting, because those records directly related to a ongoing criminal proceeding, and doing so protected that individual's constitutional rights. The district court read the NPRA in a way that did not create absurd results, that upholds its constitutionality and allows the NPRA to coexist with those constitutional protections. I also want to touch briefly on the mootness issue, as Your Honors has mentioned that. In reading the reply brief, one of the release requested was to order Washoe County to release those records. However, I do think an exception to the mootness doctrine applies, and I think that this court should rule on the issue of whether in-camera inspection was required in this case. There's a relatively short duration for a basis to withhold in this case, and this was reflected in just the fact that one of the requests became moot at the district court level, that Abel Lopez-Lopez case, and then the bias records in this case. And in going back to, I think, the Conrad 2 case, there was other records requests in that case that became moot at the district court level, at least so I'm told.
Have all the records been produced at this point in unredacted form?
Yes, Your Honor.
So what are we doing here that is currently a live dispute? I understand you cite Valdez Jimenez day before yesterday, but I'm really troubled that we don't have a live dispute here, yet this is Reno doesn't have an assurance from you that the production is complete. And we're not getting briefs on what about their residual issue with respect to attorney's fees and so on. It's not an ideal situation, but if all the records have been produced, is there anything more the court could order you to do other than pay their attorney's fees?
Well, I want to touch briefly on the attorney's fees. So the district court denied the request for attorney's fees, and that was not appealed in this case. As to challenging the nature
of... But if they prevailed, if they prevailed on the merits of their appeal, wouldn't that...
It might. I mean, it just kind of depends on what this court would order. But in this case, at least Washoe County is seeking direction from this court as to whether in-camera review would be necessary or whether in this case...
Well, but why would we do that if everything's been produced? What would we be achieving? I understand you think it's in the Valdez exception, but let's say I disagree with you. Is there anything left of this case for that we could make a difference?
As to that issue, I don't think so. But I do think an exception applies. It does have wide public importance. I think both parties would agree.
But let's just set aside Valdez Jimenez, and I'm sorry to press you so hard on this, but let's say I disagree that this is in that exception. Is this case moot?
Not the entire case. So we have three issues on appeal. We have the whether the automatic responses were sufficient, whether the denials in this case were sufficient, and then whether the court should have done an in-camera review before denying that petition.
Which are live?
I think what's live is the sufficiency of the automatic response and the denials.
So what relief could we give if we were to determine that your automatic response was deficient?
I think the relief would be that, it would be a reverse and remand consistent with whatever this court would order. However, I would ask that and urge this court to find that it was sufficient.
I understand you'd like us to give you a ruling in your favor, but let's say we ruled against you. What difference would that make to them if, in fact, that you have produced all of the records unredacted to them that they requested?
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, attorney's fees was not raised on appeal, and that's already been requested. And so I would argue that that's already been decided on if it were brought up again in district court. But
and what good would in-camera review do?
of the bias records that were released. Is that your question?
Yeah, what would be the point?
I don't think in-camera review would be appropriate at this point because the records have been released and redacted. So any in-camera review, I suppose, would be on those records in an unredacted form, perhaps on a challenge for those redactions, but that's not before this court and that hasn't been done at the district court level. And that would be a different analysis than what occurred in this case.
So maybe then what's still live would be their objection to the redactions on the documents?
I mean, for purposes of this court, no objection has been made and filed and briefed, and that's something that would need to occur at the district court level before coming back up here. Thank you, Your Honor. I also wanted to touch on the in-camera review issue. It would have been redundant in this case. The district court was provided with the criminal docket sheet in the related criminal case showing the current status. At that point, a trial was set. The district court was also provided with a criminal complaint showing that one of the charges the defendant was facing was directly related to that officer-involved shooting incident. As well as information regarding the fact that the DA's office was still making its charging decision. And in addition, the district court was provided with ample legal authority regarding the constitutional harms involved in premature release of records. And so it would have been inefficient. It wouldn't have changed the outcome of the Donray balancing test because the potential harms and disclosure were well established. And I want to take a minute to contrast this with Conrad 1. In that case, there was an ongoing prosecution or allusion to an ongoing prosecution, but at the district court level, I went back through the briefing and the only thing that the district court was provided regarding that case was a declaration from a law enforcement officer giving his opinion regarding fair trial implications. And so this court said that just relying on that declaration was an abuse of discretion and that was insufficient. But this court has never created a bright line rule regarding in-camera review. And so having an opinion on whether in situations where we have an ongoing prosecution and then we have this other civil public records case where that defendant's not even a party, but in that case, we provide that district court with the status of that case, the criminal complaint or whatever it is showing that the records at issue are directly related to that prosecution, that in-camera review would not be required in that instance. And that would be very helpful. The criminal court really should be the gatekeeper of any records that come out of that case to protect the constitutional rights, to avoid any witness speculate or witness influences speculation in the public domain, exposing untested evidence that might not even be admissible in that criminal case, and potentially implicating the defendant's due process rights. Like, we don't need to be creating issues on appeal for a criminal conviction based on premature release under the NPRA. And I want to talk a little bit about the automatic response in this case. So Washoe County, according to the information in the record, in 2022 processed over 5,000 public records requests. That's not the number that includes subpoenas or interagency requests. And that is about 100 requests per week that staff is processing. NRS 239.0107 requires a government entity to do one of four things when they receive a public records request. One of those things is if the records are not readily available, they need to provide notice of that fact and an estimated date upon which they reasonably believe they will be available. In this case, the Sheriff's Office has unfortunately had to make the call due to the volume of requests that they've received that records are not available within that 5 business days. So they've provided a 30-day timeline. That's what they reasonably believe when the records will be available. And Sheriff's Office records are different than another agency such as Parks or maybe Planning, where people are requesting certain plans that were filed for something where there's not confidentiality issues in play. With sheriff's office records, even something simple as a report for a closed case is going to require redactions of dates of birth, social security numbers, things like that, that take processing time. And so based on that, the sheriff's office has determined that the 30 days is the best estimate that it will provide the records. And there's no requirement that the sheriff's office or any government entity provide a reason as to why there is a delay.
But what about their point that effectively you're giving yourself, the statute gives you 5 days and you're giving yourself 30 in all cases, and that that's contrary to the statute?
So the statute doesn't require records within 5 days. It requires, like I said, one of four things, and one of those things is, if they're not available, a reasonable date. And so to respond to some comments that were made regarding who's to say it's not 60 days or 6 months, which is a valid concern. However, those concerns can be addressed through a challenge under NRS 239.011, which allows a requester to challenge an unreasonable delay in processing records. That was not done here. What is being challenged is the ability to provide an automatic response in general. And the sheriff's office has made the determination that it's going to take about 30 days. And that's reflected in the responses. The second request that was done, Abel Lopez Lopez, in the record, it shows a 24 days from the request to the final denial. The third request, which was for evidence logs, it shows 23 days from the date of the request to sending out those records. So that 30 days is just that good faith estimate as to how long it's going to take to track down those records. As far as the denials in this case, the district court is looking at a snapshot in time as to whether all of the records before it show a violation of the NPRA. And that's including the response that the county filed, which had supplemental denials. And so within those denials, we have notice of a denial, but also citation to legal authority. There's no requirement that we provide full briefing or legal analysis. There's some pushback about this court's decision that the government can't just rely on the Donray factors or cite them, but that's at the district court briefing level. It's not at the request stage, where we just have to provide a citation to legal authority, and that was done in this case. And the district court was within its discretion in taking into account the ongoing denials to determine whether there was a violation. And again, the attorney's fees was not challenged on appeal. There could have been a motion for reconsideration or something to go into more catalyst briefing under the catalyst theory, which, as this court knows, if the petition prompted disclosure, then there may be some entitlement to attorney's fees. That was not done in this case. All we have is the district court denying the request for attorney's fees, and Conrad chose to not appeal that issue.
But in other cases where attorney's fees have been awarded and the court reverses the predicate for the denial, it's not unusual to vacate the order and include that as part of the remand because the predicate's been removed. Do you have a comment on that?
Well, that's interesting. I don't think, I guess it would depend on the nature of this court's denial as to whether it could vacate that attorney's fees order, and to what extent that implicates that portion of that order.
I mean, does the provision of the records by in February by your client agency, I mean, he got some records as a result of the response. So does that alter the coordinates on which the district judge decided to deny fees?
May I answer? So the district court is looking at a snapshot in time. And when the district court denied the petition, there was still an active prosecution. So that denial and withholding was lawful and was appropriate. So there wouldn't be a basis for attorney's fees. In other words, the petition itself, that filing, is not what prompted disclosure. It's instead the fact that the criminal defendant ended up pleading guilty and sentenced, and that case was closed, so now it's appropriate to release those records.
Before you run off, I just want to be clear. In February, when the documents were provided, they were redacted.
That's correct.
Provided with redactions. And since that provision, the appropriateness of the redactions or any of that has not been reviewed by the district court.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Do you have anything further?
No, I don't.
Thank you. Justice Perry-Gary?
Nope.
Anything?
Thank you. No.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
All right. Your Honor, if I may, I'd like to just clarify a few points or address some of the arguments my friend on the other side has made. Number one, mootness. We certainly think, and at least in terms of the Valles records, that this is an issue that's capable of repetition, yet evading review. It's capable of repetition because no one has told Washoe County that they can't do this automatic 30-day extension when responding to a records request. And it evades review because it takes some time to get an issue before this court. And in the interim, often, as was the case here, records get disclosed, which can affect the justicability of a decision. We, of course, maintain our position that it's still an unmoot justicable issue, but it, even if this court finds otherwise, it's certainly capable of repetition yet evading review. That's true on several issues, citations to the records, the redactions, and the 30-day issue. In terms of attorney's fees, the Records Act requires that an entitlement to attorney's fees is triggered upon prevailing party status. We lost everything in our petition. So in my view, it wasn't appropriate for us to challenge any attorney's fees determination at that point in time. That's for after a judgment's issued, which conveys upon us prevailing party status. After remand, I think we could still make an application for attorney's fees based on the catalyst theory. You know, there's a reasonableness time limit for that, but it's not the same as the time limit under Rule 54 of 21 days after a judgment's issued. We've had no judgment in our favor issued in this case. Turning to the issue surrounding investigatory files, this is something that keeps getting revisited in these public records cases ever since Donray, and this court has declined historically, and it should still decline to establish, you know, a bright line rule that investigative records are off limits. That's a political question. If the legislature wants to make that rule, it can do so, but it would be inappropriate for the judicial branch to impose that requirement upon the Records Act, especially when it's already set up this sufficient system for analyzing disclosure dating back to Donray, the Donray factors, the public interest in disclosure of the records. The statutory changes thereafter that this court addressed in Haley. It's further addressing these issues, such as redacted records in the Gibbons matter. We don't see any reason why, or we don't think it would be proper for the court to do that. In terms of the number of public records requests that the county gets, we have no, you know, means to contest that, but we don't think it makes, you know, the reason why they can't respond on time is unknown to us. Is that, are they allocating sufficient staff to address these issues? The argument that we're not challenging the time versus the 30-day requirement, I think, is a distinction without a difference. The five-day requirement isn't just an empty promise of an acknowledgement of the receipt of a records request by a government agency. It requires more. Under subsection 2 of the applicable statute, you know, if the records are readily available, you're supposed to provide them as expeditiously as practicable. And under subsection 1, and within 5 days, you're either supposed to say why you can't provide them, citing to a specific statute or rule, or indicate reasonably when the records will be available. Now, just saying we'll look at this in 30 days doesn't meet that requirement. With that, I'd be glad to answer any questions the court may have in my remaining time. Those are all the points I'd like to address.
With respect to the 30 days, so is it unreasonable for, as I understand, the 30 days is not, we'll look at it in 30 days. Within the 30 days, it could be day 6, could be day 7, could be day 23, that they've kind of made a determination based upon the amount of requests they have, the available staffing, and those type of things to say, hey, within 30 days, we think we can get that done. And it could be much quicker, and it could be more toward the 30. They could need more time. Is it just your position that within those 5 days, they have to make those determinations about where it is, how much, and what statutory provisions may or may not affect disclosure?
Not entirely, Your Honor. We think the statute is vaguer than we'd like, but I believe the legislative purpose behind that is to provide government agencies some degree of flexibility because there's a recognition that some records might be hard to find. They might be hard to get. There might be staffing concerns. But an auto-generated email doesn't meet the bar, in our opinion. We think that someone at least has to look at the record and say, oh, you know, we've got this on the shelf over here. We can provide it right away, or this is going to be a bit more complex. It's voluminous. There's a whole bunch of reasons they can reasonably extend the five-day requirement. And when they do that and they provide reasons or they provide a citation to a confidentiality grounds, you know, we have no complaint under the statute. We have no reasonable basis to contest what they're doing. But if an auto-generated email comes back saying, oh, it's actually 30, it's not 5. We, in 30 days, we'll let you know, what the lay of the land is. That, we think, wholly disregards the promptness requirement, which is embodied in the legislative declaration, which is just common sense. People need to have these access to these records that are readily available as soon as possible. A blanket 30-day automatic email without a person ever looking at the request fails to meet the statutory bar, Your Honor.
All right, Justice Perrier, do you have anything further?
Nope, I'm good. Thank you.
All right, thank you, sir. And